business to the head. It gets beyond all the headlines you read. Don't need lip service with a wink and a nod. You need a man on a mission from God. Well, not to worry, here's Bob in your life.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. The Texas legislature has passed an abortion regulation, and the abortion industry is up in arms, and pro-lifers almost everywhere are celebrating. Reminds me of 1994 when I had to disagree with my audience. My audience was ecstatic about the Republican Revolution in the House of Representatives, and they said, this is going to save America. It's going to turn things around. Things are better. And I went on the air and I said, look, I need to disagree with you guys. This is not good. This is not worth celebrating. Things are going to get worse. Well, the Texas law, HB2, it's going to get worse. It already is worse. So to talk about the bill, what the bill actually does immediately and to the battle to save unborn children, we have an old longtime friend of the show. Hey, Will, it's Bob and Will again. Welcome back, Will, to Bob and Yurt Live.
Hey, Bob, it's great to be here.
Thanks for all your work with the Collaborators Project and so much that you've done over the years. So, Will, let's talk through HB2 in Texas.
Well, first of all, I'm not sure if that's going to be necessary. If the pro-choicers are up in arms about this and the pro-lifers are celebrating, isn't that all we need to know?
Yeah, it should be, right? Must be a good bill.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, that's not our standard, so we better take a look at this and actually read the language of the bill and figure out what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Jill Stanek asked on her website, you know, pro-life blogger Jill Stanek, she asked, since the pro-aborts are so angry, she said, this is a sincere question, what do you personhood people think about, since they're so angry, doesn't that imply this is good? So my wife, Cheryl, responded, and she said, Jill, when wicked people are angry, that doesn't tell you whether something is good or bad. The Marxist hated the Nazis. The Sunni Muslim hate the Shia. So what tells you whether something is good or bad is whether it's obedient to God or not.
Right. Yeah, there's going to be a common theme when we're dealing with these issues, and that is, what is our standard? So our standard should not be the enemy. I think that that's a pretty easy first rule. Our standard is not evil. Our standard is not the enemy.
So the bill itself, Will, let's talk about it.
Yeah, so House Bill 2 out of Texas, a lot of people know it as the fetal pain bill. Other people know it as the 20-week bill. And it does a lot of different things, but kind of the main focus is on the fact that they are going to restrict, not end, they're going to restrict abortion after 20 weeks post-fertilization.
Okay, it's titled, I have it here, you have it, and we believe this is the latest version. State legislatures don't always make it easy, and the governor has not signed this by the time we printed this out, but I believe this is the current version that passed both the House and the Senate, but it's a bill to be entitled an act relating to the regulation of abortion. So
okay.
It regulates abortion.
And that's that's actually the first red flag right there. You really don't want to regulate criminal activity, right? You want to end it. So this is coming out first sentence. This act is to relate to the regulation of abortion.
So when you regulate something, God tells us that we need to oppose the killing of the innocent. Should we say, well, we're trying to save some, so our law will say it's okay if you kill the baby early because we're trying to save some of the other babies? So we're consenting to the killing of certain ones, really all of every baby conceived in Texas under this bill could be killed, every baby, by the authority of this bill.
Right, this bill, we'll get to that.
Yeah.
But they are. Essentially what's going on here, and again, it's supposedly our allies that are behind this bill.
Right.
That they are consenting to the death of some in order to save others. And people often have to be reminded that that is not a just thing to do. If it was possible to cure the world of cancer by killing one innocent child, you don't do it. You don't kill the one innocent child.
And if somebody else, if the wicked say, well, we're going to kill these 1,000 children in order to cure cancer, and you say, well, we want to save some. So we say, well, it would be okay to kill those 900 to cure cancer. And we're trying to save 100. That's not acceptable. It's not moral. And therefore, it will backfire. And more kids almost certainly will be killed because of this bill. But we'll talk through that.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of people always like to try to bring things down to a numbers game. And you can't do that with morality. You just can't do that. You can't say, well, how many millions of people we cure of cancer by just having to kill just one, just trade one.
Right. So right and wrong, you don't need a mathematical equation to determine right or wrong. That is utilitarianism. It's secular humanism. It's John Stuart Mill's the greatest good for the greatest number of people. So when people say, I've heard it in defense of this bill, if it saves one life, it's worth it. And is it possible that this specific regulation might save some lives?
Sure.
It is, right?
Yeah, it is possible.
Yeah.
Many things could save lives.
American Right to Life is against regulations. They've always admitted that this bill may save some lives. It may cost a lot more lives, even a lot more than it saves, but it might save a life, yeah, or a number.
And it also very well might lead to the death of more innocent preborn children.
Well, what if it does save one life? You know, I often hear, if it saves one life, it's worth it.
Yeah, that seems to be the main argument coming from pro-lifers celebrating this bill. It's some variation of that. If it saves a life, it's worth it. It's going to save lives. It's a step in the right direction, et cetera, et cetera. I like to stand back, and it's weird, but that sounds so familiar. If it saves one life, it's worth it. I've heard that somewhere before, and then I quickly realize, oh, yeah, that's the liberals' argument.
Right.
The liberals use that all the time.
Yeah, when like with guns.
Exactly. When they're trying to pass something like gun control, they will argue if it saves one life, it's worth it. And they think that saving that one life is going to trump everything else. Well, the reality is we can quickly see past that. That argument for gun control doesn't do anything for us because, A, there's fundamental human rights.
The God-given right to self-defense.
Right. The God-given right to self-defense is going to trump the fact that they can save a life because they're going to take away guns.
So even if it could be proved that they would save at least one life, that doesn't justify negotiating away my God-given right to life to be armed for self-defense.
Exactly right. And so again, if it could be proven that this bill is going to save lives, it's unjust to take away the God-given right to life of certain individuals in order to save others.
And this bill does that because it affirms actually repeatedly all different ways in which you could legally, by this bill, kill an unborn child.
Exactly. And getting back to the gun control issue, after we point out to them that we have God-given rights, like the right to self-defense, and that they can't take away guns just because it might save a person or two, we also quickly point out to them how short-sighted their thinking is, and that taking away guns, while it may save some, it's possibly going to lead to the death of more innocent people. Mm. Why? Because who's going to have the guns? The criminals are going to have the guns. The innocent have been disarmed, and it's obvious what's going to come of that. Mm-hmm. So that plays in here. Mm-hmm. That plays in to this House Bill 2 out of Texas, because what's going to happen? Well, when we read what this bill talks about, we can easily see how it could very likely lead to a woman choosing abortion who in the past might not have.
Well, because there's a deadline now, and she will be pressured by others, including by her own decision-making. I've got to decide. I've got just one more week to decide, and she might then go ahead and kill the baby.
Yeah, exactly right. So she's got a deadline now of 20 weeks, and if she's nearing that 20-week point and she's on the fence about whether or not to keep her child or to kill her child, she now has pressure from this bill, from the pro-lifers, to pull the trigger, no pun intended, prior to that deadline.
And if she does it now, it's legal by this bill.
Exactly
right. This bill does state when abortion is legal or not. And I know that the pro-lifers will point to Roe v. Wade, but if Roe v. Wade were reversed the day after this bill took force, then abortion would be legal by this bill in Texas. As long as you kill a baby before 20 weeks, which almost all the kids are killed, or vast majority before 20 weeks.
Yeah, that's another unintended consequence of this bill is what are you going to do? Try to overturn your own bill? Hmm. Think of how foolish that would look.
Right.
All these people get together and they raise all this money and get all the support to pass this bill, and then all of a sudden they want to reverse it.
Mm-hmm.
What's their argument going to be?
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to really have a leg to stand on. And that is a reality, is that Roe v. Wade, which is not even a law.
Right.
It's an opinion which should
be ignored by every state and every federal law enforcement officer.
So if you ask what laws in this country make abortion legal, it's the pro-life laws.
Wow.
So if Roe v. Wade is overturned, these are the laws that will stand.
Hundreds of them that say, like in Indiana, abortion shall be a criminal offense except if the woman signs her informed consent. So now abortion is legal in Indiana, even if Roe v. Wade is overturned.
And my question is this: how many children will be killed under the pro-life laws if Roe v. Wade is overturned in the interim until these laws are struck down? How many?
Yeah. And if it weren't for personhood is the only solution to child killing in the womb. But if it wasn't for personhood, then it would take, if Roe v. Wade was merely overturned, it might take years or decades for pro-lifers now to repeal the hundreds of abortion regulations they passed. Every regulation reaffirms the right to do something. Every regulation. If there's a regulation about what color you can paint your house, that regulation says you can paint your house.
Yeah, that's something that people don't really realize oftentimes, which is a regulation must
affirm
something else.
Right, and of course it does.
And that's what these do. So it's interesting because this bill, again, we have to realize where this is coming from. This is supposedly coming from our representatives that are on our side.
Hmm.
It goes out of its way at the very beginning, at the outset, to comfort and affirm to everyone, whoever's reading this, that it's not going to place an obstacle to a woman from getting an abortion. So let's read the text.
Hmm.
It says this. It says, restricting elective abortions at or later than 20 weeks post-fertilization, as provided by this act, does not impose an undue burden or a substantial obstacle on a woman's ability to have an abortion.
So they're saying there is no undue burden on a woman who wants to have an abortion, and that's because, like you said, every baby conceived by the time this bill is passed in Texas, every 100% of them can be killed, even under the authority of this bill.
Yeah, exactly right. So I'm not exactly sure who they're trying to please or why, but they are saying in this bill the truth that we've been saying all along.
Well, and it's Samuel Alito. He's the one who wrote, as a federal judge, the undue burden test. So they're saying, look, this is not an undue burden on women because women could still kill their babies. That's what, in fact, they say, right? They say it's not an undue burden because of A and B. What is A and B?
Well, A is the fact that the woman has adequate time to decide whether to have an abortion in the first 20 weeks after fertilization.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's a direct quote.
A, every woman has plenty of time to decide whether to kill her baby.
And then B.
Under this legislation.
Right. And then B is the exceptions. This act, I'll read it. This act does not apply to abortions that are necessary to avert the death or substantial and irreversible physical impairment of a major bodily function of the pregnant woman. So that's kind of like a health exception. Or
severe health, physical health.
Or abortions that are performed on unborn children with severe fetal abnormalities.
So the law is the great teacher. So the law, and Will, there is this bill, I think, you know, when you're talking about child killing, then the whole world is insane. Nothing is rational in the context of child killing, including pro-life abortion regulations, child killing regulations. They're not rational either. But this bill contradicts itself in so many ways, sends so many mixed messages. But one here is, hey, it doesn't apply if the baby's handicapped. So if the baby's handicapped, and it says severe fetal abnormalities, and then that's defined in some other legislation, and you have to go over there to look at that, and that is if the baby in the womb has a life-threatening condition. So they're saying if the baby has a life-threatening condition, then it's okay to kill it.
Right.
Which is so absurd in the extreme. And that other definition was their pro-life definition from some other child-killing regulation.
Yeah, the common theme here, unfortunately, is anti-personhood. Mm. As you read through this, they're not referring to or acting as if the unborn child is a person by all of these different exceptions. They're essentially creating a class of people, right? So children with severe fetal abnormalities are, I guess, somehow more or less valuable than children without.
Right.
So all of this undermines personhood.
Yeah, exactly right. And then it says this bill has two sections. We're at really the end of the first section. And the end of the first section says if this statute is found to be an undue burden by a judge, you know, a judge says this was an undue burden on a pregnant woman or a group of pregnant women, then they say then it doesn't apply. Then it'll be severed, whatever is found to be an undue burden. So just the equivocation, the confusion, the mixed messages, utterly indicating that the baby is not a person, because if the baby was a person, we would never, we as pro-life, conservative, Republicans, whatever, we would never say you can kill a person within 20 weeks after birth. Let's say it's after the baby was born. Say we're in Germany. And they're, like you pointed out recently, Will, in Germany, they're putting Jewish children in ovens. So if they pass the bill saying, well, you can't put a child in an oven after 20 weeks of age, after birth. That's, I mean, it's horrific to even think that. Horrific to even think it. But I think pro-lifers are desperate. That's obvious. But I also think, in a way, we covet the Democrats, because the Democrats have 1,000 legislative victories. So America is being destroyed by the death of 1,000 cuts. Every time the Democrats pass another piece of legislation, it's further destruction to the country. Well, the pro-lifers, they're envious. They want to pass bills too. And so they support a bill, even though the bill is utterly undermining of the principle of the right to life. They still want to pass a bill so we could feel good that we've accomplished something.
Yeah, it's almost as if their attitude is that some victory is better than none.
Right.
But the reality is that this is not a victory. And we've got to be able to focus on a strategy and focus long term if we're going to expect to succeed.
Mm.
Setting things up like this bill, which are obviously going to backfire, is not the way to do it. I've been telling people a lot, if all of the time, effort, and money spent on regulating abortion the last 40 years was spent on ending it, it very well may have ended by now.
Billions of dollars with a concerted effort by tens of millions of Americans and all of our pro-life religious leaders and pro-life conservative leaders is to teach people the baby is a person and has a God-given right to life. That's why it's wrong to kill a single child. We could have made tremendous progress. Instead, we're trying to save, what, 0.1%. And when you said some women might be pressured to kill the baby sooner because of the 20-week deadline, there's other ways more kids could be killed. For one, people might think that, well, the younger babies probably don't feel pain.
Yeah, exactly. So let's look at what this bill is, again, teaching the general public. So Section 1 says that the state has a compelling state interest in protecting the lives of unborn children from the stage at which the medical evidence indicates that these children are capable of feeling pain.
That was a great statement if they would have shut up
right
after the word children.
Right.
The state has a compelling interest in protecting the lives of unborn children, period. But when they continued, they taught something that is so destructive and contrary to the goal of protecting kids. They say they have a compelling interest to protect children from when they could feel pain.
Yeah, it's horrendous. And that's the message that's being taught, is that the state has a compelling interest to protect children that can feel pain, but not children that cannot feel pain.
Yeah, now this bill doesn't say, if you read it technically, that children younger than 20 weeks cannot feel pain. It doesn't say that, but it says that an unborn child can feel pain by not later than 20 weeks. But the implication to many is, first of all, if the baby doesn't feel pain, then there's no compelling interest to protect it. That's stated explicitly here. And then probably the younger kids might not feel pain at some point. They probably don't, which is a lie. And also, even if they do feel pain, maybe we could give the baby some kind of anesthetic, and then the baby won't feel pain. We could have an abortion. Then we could have it even later than 20 weeks.
Right. Yeah. The message, again, first and foremost, that's being taught is that, you know, there's this dividing line as to when babies can feel pain and when they can't, which is not even true, right?
Right.
Pain is not physical. It's not something that you can just measure in a science lab. You know, anybody that's, you know, lived through life and experienced life know that a broken heart is far more painful than a broken leg.
Wow.
Emotional pain is way worse than physical pain.
Wow. And in childbirth, the pain of childbirth, which is so severe, I've heard, compared to the pain of a child dying, there's no
comparison.
No comparison.
So here we are, and again, this is the pro-lifers doing this. What are we teaching? Well, we're teaching that, okay, well, these babies don't feel pain, and, well, if they
don't
feel pain...
Some of them may or may not, and whether they do or not determines whether or not we're going to let you kill them.
Yeah, exactly right. And if the state doesn't have a compelling interest to protect these children, why should the woman carrying the child? Mm. So here's the reality. The education being provided, and we have to try to step back and think as if we were pregnant and we were contemplating killing our children, which is very difficult to do. Mm. We got to try to go into their minds. And you know what? This is going to be comforting and reassuring now. You know what? I don't know if I should have an abortion if my child's going to feel pain, but now I've been taught that they won't.
That's
not that bad.
That's the implication, right? You have an abortion by 12 weeks, probably the baby can't feel pain. So the implication is, let's say a woman is younger in her pregnancy. She's only 12 weeks along, but she thinks, well, 12 weeks, the baby almost certainly is not going to feel pain.
Exactly
right. So the baby won't be hurt.
That is unintended consequences of what this bill is doing and what pro-lifers are celebrating.
Right. So, Will, the second half is all about basically regulations. They want abortionists and abortion clinics to meet modern medical standards. Now, they have their reason. They say that makes it more difficult, and so some abortion clinics may close. That's their reasoning.
Right. That's not their stated reason. That's kind of how the pro-lifers are spinning this. The stated reason in the bill is that it's going to be safer now.
Right. So the abortions will be safe, legal, and rare.
Right.
That's what the bill is advocating.
Absolutely.
Safe because of the medical clinic requirements. Legal, as long as you do it before 20 weeks or any of the exceptions. And rare because maybe, what, 0.1% fewer abortions maybe?
Right. Yeah, so the pro-choice argument that they want abortion to be safe, legal, and rare, here we have wrapped up in this bill. This bill is trying to make a great case to make abortion safe, legal, and rare in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting because these regulations on the facilities and the drugs used and the physician requirements to have an abortion, what is that going to do? Mm-hmm. Well, that's essentially going to make a woman feel more comfortable that the horror story she hears
about. I'm getting good quality health care
right.
at an abortion mill.
Right.
Well, let's say it closed 3 abortion mills in Texas, right? It's always great when an abortion mill closes. That's great.
Absolutely.
But Planned Parenthood has closed down more abortion mills than any pro-life group in existence.
Right.
Because it's an industry and it's a maturing industry. It's like, do you remember all the mom and pop VHS video rental shops? When you were young, did they have those?
Yeah.
And then Blockbuster put them all out of business. And now Netflix is putting Blockbuster out of business.
Right.
So Planned Parenthood doesn't care if the mom and pop abortion mills go out of business, and only the ones that really offer modern medical standards are the ones remaining. That improves their industry.
Yeah, it improves their look. It improves their industry. They essentially assume those customers that used to go to the other places
are now coming to Planned Parenthood, which is more organized to continue abortion decriminalized in America. This backfires in almost every way when you think about it. And Will, when they say it might save a life, if it saves one life, well, American Right to Life, they agree, yeah, it might. But then look at all the babies that will be killed because of this law, and the regulators say, no, it's not true. They can't admit even to one negative consequence.
Right.
I've not heard it.
That's right. They are absolutely unwilling to admit that this could possibly have any negative consequences, which is very immature, and it's unfortunate because if we're unwilling to be honest about what's going on, how do we ever expect to win the war?
Right. And so one side of the regulation versus personhood, one side or the other is wrong on this. And it seems to me when you're in such denial that you can't acknowledge, like, for example, if Roe v. Wade was overturned, this bill might be the reason for a million babies to be killed in Texas. This bill might keep abortion legal to kill a million babies.
That's right.
And that they can't, first of all, see that immediately, and that they don't warn people about the downside of their own bill that they proposed. There's something wrong there. They're not being honest with themselves or the Lord, I believe.
Yeah, absolutely right. They're just looking for some victory or something to feel good about, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So, Bob, it's interesting to sometimes take a step back and look long term and realize where we've come. And Roe v. Wade, the opinion from 1973, there's something interesting about that opinion. And the justices argued that it was okay to kill the unborn child because they said it was not a person. That was their way of justifying killing the child.
Right.
They were not comfortable admitting it was a person and in the same breath saying you could kill it.
Yeah, Republican Justice Harry Blackmun said that we can't tell if it's a person. We don't know.
Right.
It's probably not a person.
And so let's take a look at where we've come. You know, we're 40 years later, and the pro-lifers are admitting in their bills, in their legislation, that the unborn child is a person. They're still comfortable saying it's okay to kill it.
Regulating how you can kill it, consenting to the killing of some to hopefully save others.
Right.
Yeah.
So this is not progress. This is backwards.
Yeah, you don't consent. Will, if a terrorist gets you and your family, and he says to the father, tell me which of your kids I can kill, and then I'll let the others go. You do that?
Of course
you
not.
You tell him? A wicked person could say, rape your daughter, and then we'll save 100 other young girls.
Right.
You do it? Of course not. You don't. The greatest good for the greatest number is godless human moral relativism. It's humanism.
Absolutely.
God doesn't want us to calculate the unknowable future. He wants us to obey him.
Right. Yeah, we need to obey God. That has to be our standard. If our standard is not God, no matter what victory we think we have or what good we think we have, we won't, because God is much smarter than us. And I'd like to end with a quote from a pastor named Paul Washer, who puts it just brilliantly. He says, rather than being pragmatic and doing what we think will work, we are to do what's right, whether it works or not.
Wow, Will.
That's right on the money.
That's tremendous, Will. Long time producer of Bob and Your Life. Thanks for being back in studio, Will. So appreciate that. Also, our video, Focus on the Strategy. Please go to American Right to Life. Watch Focus on the Strategy 2, the second in the series, in the trilogy. So, hey, we're out of time. Our website, kgov.com. This is Bob Edyard reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.